now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix.
Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today, I will talk about a variety of subjects, starting with my lecture that I gave this past Saturday in West Ryde, Eastwood Leagues Club, West Ryde, a suburb of Sydney. And it was quite a successful lecture. We had a good turnout, very switched on people, attentive the whole time through, and they didn't flinch at the information I shared. They wanted to hear it. They were eager for more. And the fact of the matter is, even in 4 hours, is just not enough time to go into all the details. But I gave it the good old college try, and I spoke as much as I could about the reptilians and about my labs. And so I feel that I got a lot of good information out, and I had a lot of good comments and compliments and good reviews from the members of the audience. And what I did was I went down the list of key points, topics, subtopics, and sprinkled in some personal examples of what I was talking about, as well as examples from the testimony of others or the research that Barbara Bartholik and Candy Turner had done, which I later confirmed on my own. I talked about the meth agenda, which is absolutely key, and I talked about the astral dreamscape manipulation, and I talked about the reptilian brain, the R complex, and I showed a video of serial killer Joel Rifkin and how a brain scan had been done on him, which showed non-existent frontal lobe capacity, which means that he has Joel Rifkin. I'm not making a laughing matter about it. Joel Rifkin has no impulse control. And in another documentary I'd seen, Joel Rifkin was given a series of dexterity tests, and it was proven by the examiners that Joel Rifkin was not in control of his limbs, not in control of his hands, feet, his whole body. So this was a perfect storm. You have no impulse control, no empathy, no conscience, and he had no control over his own body. This made him an ideal medium that an entity, a reptilian Draco entity, could take him up as a host and then use his body as a medium through which to do whatever it wanted. And in Joel Rifkin's case, that meant being a serial murderer. Joel Rifkin killed 17 women. It was the entities working through Joel Rifkin. Joel Rifkin definitely is guilty, but it should be understood that there is a non-human intelligence at work. And so I pointed out the dynamics of this, how it works. And I kept emphasizing and re-emphasizing certain key points, such as the fact that we are resonators. We are resonators of energy, of emotion, of energy in motion, emotions, and how it behooves these negative entities to keep us in a lower frequency bandwidth. And I went into detail about this. I went into a number of details. I really enjoyed my lecture. I really felt that I accomplished what I had set out to do, giving a lot of key intel to the audience members. And I'm looking forward to our next lecture in the ongoing Reptilian MyLab Chronicles lecture series, and that will be in Melbourne, April 23rd, actually a suburb of Melbourne called Burwood. Burwood at the Unity Melbourne. It's a very nice facility, and we should have a very good turnout. So if you want more information, go to my website, thecosmicswitchboard.com, and then click on the link about the upcoming lecture in Melbourne. And as time goes on, as we have more lecture workshop series dates, we will post them on our website. Another thing that I was talking about was the electromagnetic beaming of MyLabs. And I think that, well, in fact, I know this is an underreported aspect of the MyLab experience. Everyone wants to hear the, you know, chic and trendy and sexy stories about being an assassin and killing alien ambassadors and, you know, hijacking alien space stations, all this super soldier stuff. But what I strive to do in my lectures is get down to the nuts and bolts, get down to the nuts and bolts of reptilian abductions, of the hosting process when a human hybrid is prepped, is made ready to be taken up as a host through astral dreamscape manipulation, through, you know, promotion of certain drug use, meth use, promotion within the individual of a fascination and an obsession with ritual magic, etc., etc. Right? I like to get down to the nitty-gritty, the nuts and bolts, as a basis, a template for people to understand all this. And so it is with the MyLab aspect, where I was talking about the electromagnetic beaming of MyLabs. It's a key point for people to remember that, you know, we fully spend two-thirds of our life sleeping. Well, not me. I don't get that much sleep, unfortunately. But a lot of other people do. They spend most of their lives sleeping, and when we're asleep, we're vulnerable. And up until the recent past, it's been fairly uniform across the board. These negative entities and these marauding negative deep black organizations themselves awash with hosts for reptilian and other entities that are running their show, that they take advantage of and exploit people who are sleeping. And one of the ways they do this is through electromagnetic beaming. Beaming the frontal lobe. I was just talking about Joel Rifkin and how the frontal lobe of Joel Rifkin is non-existent. It's not there. So the higher centers of consciousness, conscience, empathy, caring, it's non-existent. There's no impulse control on top of that. So when the entity takes over Joel Rifkin, it can compel him to do anything. And Joel Rifkin is just along for the ride. His consciousness is not even human, strictly speaking. And so we see this reflected in the electromagnetic beaming and programming of sleeping MyLabs, where they will beam the frontal lobe and just chip away at it, and basically with the intention of making the person impulsive, making the person irritable, making the person prone to violence and violent outbursts and erratic behavior, because that's what they want in some cases, where certain individuals are concerned. And there's a movie that goes along with it. So while the person is laying there sleeping, they're compelled either through virtual reality training or through astral virtual, some form of combination of astral dreamscape manipulation and virtual reality environment programming, while their frontal lobe is being beamed and chipped away at, they are in this virtual environment scenario where they are always being attacked by people, attacked by crowds of people, and the parts of their brain are being zapped and manipulated to make them aggressive, to make them frustrated, to make them feel a sense of anxiety and animalistic fear and aggression. And so in the movie that's playing out in our example, as a person lies there sleeping, they're being set upon on all sides by people attacking them. Crowds, everywhere they run to, they get away from one group that's attacking them. They turn the corner, there's another group of people, another mob, and the way the beaming works is it simulates in the sensations of the person about their face and about their body and about their head. They feel the physical sensations in sync with the movie that's playing out in their mind. So if in the movie that's playing out in their mind in this virtual reality, someone jostles them, you know, wraps their arms around them, they will feel that. They will feel the bodily sensation. If in the virtual environment, somebody is bopping them about the head, bopping them in the ears, punching them in the face, slapping them, they will feel that. And this is how the sense of frustration, anxiety, how the aggression is instilled in these people. It's happening in real time. And after a while in some of these scenarios, even inanimate objects, like a white picket fence, drapery, machinery, whatever, it comes to life and likewise attacks them. It wraps itself around them. It levitates them. It lifts them. It binds them. And all the while, the person is laying there, got the rapid eye movement going on behind the eyelids. The frontal lobe is being just steadily, like chipped away at. And meanwhile, in their mind's eye, they're just being attacked from all sides. So again, it's the idea is to create this animalistic fear, this aggression where they lash out in all directions because, as far as they're concerned, they're being attacked from every direction. The reptilians do this also. It's not just the military MyLab controllers that do this. And in truth, a lot of these military MyLab controllers are reptilian Draco-human hybrids anyway. So it's difficult to tell where one ends and one where the other begins. It's so much of it is just all wrapped up in one. Different parts of the brain will be beamed for different purposes. The part of the brain which induces heavy sleep, the feeling that your eyelids weigh a ton or 2 tons each, that part of the brain will be zapped in order to keep the person in a sleep state. Just as people go in for an overnight sleep study, where they're all hooked up with all these wires, they got this control board on their chest, and they got all these wires hooked to their head, you know, with all the sticky kind of the blue tack stuff, and they got this oxygen monitor thingy on their fingertip to measure the content of oxygen in their bloodstream, etc., etc. Well, the military MyLab controllers have far more sophisticated means to determine the brainwave state of somebody. For example, if it seems that the person is trying to force themselves to wake up from a stage-managed dream, virtual environment programming scenario, by prying their eyes open, because that's what happens, the moment the person pries their eyes open, the movie stops. Well, what they do is they realize, oh, the person's awake, they force their eyes open, their sensors tell them this, then they start intensifying the beaming at the part of the brain which induces the heavy sleep state to the point where it feels like their eyelids weigh tons each. And so they close their eyes, and the moment their eyes close, the movie starts up, they're back in the virtual reality environment. They're getting attacked again, or whatever the scenario is, for whatever behavior or modification, mind control agenda the person is being subjected to. So they will beam the frontal lobe to chip away the frontal lobe. They will beam the part of the brain that induces aggression, anger. They will beam the part of the brain which induces heavy sleep. It all depends on what they need to do. And they will also beam the sexual reproductive system. They will also beam the solar plexus, the midsection of the person. They will also beam the heart center. They will basically beam any part of the body which they feel is necessary in order to carry out their agenda, what they have in mind for the person. So we have to keep all this in mind. And the kind of theaters of mind, the kind of scenarios that play out in the mind of the sleeping person vary. It could be a sporting event. They could be simulated. The virtual reality could be simulated to make them think they're like in a in the seats of a sporting event. Some of these astral dreamscape issues are mentioned in an article I wrote for New Dawn Magazine. New Dawn Magazine is based out of Melbourne, Australia, and they've devoted an entire issue to alien encounters, alien abduction themes. I have an article in there. I also direct your attention to the article written by Len Kasten. Kasten, K-A-S-T-E-N. He references my mentor, Barbara Bartholik, and talks about her seminal work. And Barbara, to me, is the grand dame, the dean of alien abduction researchers. And I am proud to be one of her protégés. And kudos to Len Kasten for mentioning her in his article in the latest issue of New Dawn Magazine. And I hope we see many more such articles from New Dawn as far as alien encounters, alien abductions, reptilians are concerned, because as I've said many times before, the alien encounters is where the rubber meets the road. That's where the real intel is to be derived, is to be found, not from obsessing endlessly on lights in the sky, but on learning what we can from the actual face-to-face encounters with non-human life forms, as well as astral abductions, astral dreamscape manipulation, etc., etc. That's where we can learn most about the aliens, the subterranean beings, the interdimensional beings, and whatever else other kind of being is messing with us. So kudos to Len Kasten, kudos to New Dawn Magazine. So please, if you can find New Dawn where you're at, I hope you purchase the newest issue. One thing that we must remember also is that what's going on the surface is merely a reflection of what's going on above ground in the higher planes and other dimensions and throughout this physical cosmos, as well as what's going on perhaps underground in the subterranean caverns, in the underground tunnel systems. We see on the surface, well, it's a right bloody mess, as some of our friends in the UK might call it. Unbelievably, you have the mummy, John McCain, how he keeps being voted into office as the senator of Arizona, I'll never know. And then you have this other freak, Lindsey Graham. Now they're demanding an increase in U.S. military forces in Afghanistan. They already pulled out of Afghanistan for the most part in 2013. And just recently, the Taliban have taken over Sangin. Sangin is the district center, if memory serves, of Helmand Province. And it connects Kandahar with Helmand Province. It's probably the most important key strategic ground in all of Afghanistan. Sangin is also the focal point, the main opium heroin producing region of Afghanistan, and that's saying a lot. Lots of fighting happened there over the years. U.S. Marines, British Royal Marines, British Paras, lots of casualties incurred. And the U.S. troops and the coalition of the unwilling pulled out for the most part in 2013, and now the mummy, John McCain, wants them to go back. Like, it's just never enough for some of these freaks and reptiles, right? And we see what's going on in Syria. We see what's going on, continues to go on in Iraq. Now they're spreading the fighting out, intensifying the wars in Syria, in Yemen. Let's all work at staying very grounded. The energy fluctuations at this time, I don't know what it's like where you're at, but where I'm at, and in messages and discussions with friends the world over, they're feeling these energetic fluctuations too. It can alternatively feel very dense, where you feel really tired and just want to go to sleep. Other times the energies seem to be of a higher nature, higher dimensional nature, and all points in between. Let's really work at staying grounded in order to keep ourselves focused on what we need to do, consciously and subconsciously. Stay plugged into organic source, stay plugged into Mother Earth, and through Mother Earth to the sun, and through the sun to the source, etc., etc. Things are just getting started from the standpoint of what we're meant to be doing here. Sometimes it's a long march to get from point A to point B, and then point B is where things really start to happen, when you really start to make your presence felt, where you really start to make some definite impressions, both on the ether and on the physical plane. And each one of you are making definite impressions. I'm so proud of so many of you out there that have decided to draw a line in the sand, step over it, and say, beyond this point, I will not retreat. I will keep moving forward. I will make a difference. In other developments, Alex Jones of InfoWars has publicly apologized to James, whatever the hell the perp's name is, of Pizzagate infamy, and stated that as far as Alex Jones and InfoWars is concerned, Pizzagate was not real, it was a hoax, etc., etc. Other websites have jumped on that bandwagon, including Veterans Today. Like I've said before, I did a Pizzagate podcast commentary several weeks back. It's the one with it's got Freddy from Nightmare on Elm Street infamy. That's the thumbnail picture, and there's a big pizza on the image. It's a rather iconic image. And then the following week, I did a follow-up. For what it's worth, I believe that there was some deal, probably a lot of pedophilia going on, perpetrators left, right, and center, in and around those people that were identified in those leaked documents, etc., etc. But it was clear to me that the whole concept of Pizzagate was being spun out in order to create a distraction, in order to create a situation where someone, which is what happened, it was predictable and just like clockwork that a guy went into the Pizzagate place, Comet Pizza, whatever the hell it was called, supposedly armed with a weapon, and to go in there and find out for himself if anything was being done to harm children. And of course it was all set up, it was all fake, and really it was just an effort to smear and demonize those people who were speaking up about organized pedophilia networks, child kidnapping rings, etc. And so Alex Jones comes up with this apology right on the eve of a planned protest in D.C. about pedophilia networks in high places. There's no telling what happened to Alex Jones, if he was intimidated, if he was threatened. Who knows? But whatever it was something compelled him to do this, because when he first started reporting the whole Pizzagate syndrome, let's call it, he was quite passionate about it. Alex Jones is known to, you know, get emotional and cry and raise his voice, and, you know, his emotions run the gamut. But he seemed to be really emotionally overwrought by the whole the revelations coming out about the whole Pizzagate thing and the larger pedophilia networks. He had Robert Steele come on, a former CIA case officer, who likewise talked about pedophilia and Satanism in high levels in the institutions of that run and control things. So Alex was not averse to running with these kinds of stories. He's done so many times in the past. He's had Fritz Springmeier on, and much to his credit, he had David Icke on at least two occasions. He allowed David Icke to talk at length about reptilians, and on another occasion, he allowed David Icke to talk about the true nature of consciousness and how the controllers mute consciousness, limit consciousness. So he has made a point in the past at times, Alex Jones has, of getting that level of information out. So whatever happened, whatever compelled him to retract and come up with this formal apology and, you know, remove the videos and whatnot, and interviews and discussions about Pizzagate, we can only hope that it's a manifestation of something good, you know, insofar as that if the powers that be will go to the trouble of threatening Alex Jones, and I'm just guessing here, threatening him one way or the other, losing his show or something much more serious, I see it from a half-full perspective that is the archontic system covering its tracks on the back foot. I don't see it necessarily as the archontic system gaining the upper hand again. I see it as the archontic system on its back foot scrambling to cover its tracks, like so many cockroaches fleeing the kitchen floor the moment the light is turned on, right? In a dirty, kind of disease-ridden, disgusting crack house type of place. The cat is already out the bag. Whether Alex Jones or anyone else decides to retract and say that, oh, it's all a hoax. And again, I just want to emphasize, I do believe there was something about the whole Comet ping pong pizza, whatever the hell these pizza chains call themselves. I do believe that there was something to that. Because when you go back and look at all the movies, and there was a distinctly pedo subtext, pedophile theme, often as not, pizzas were in the mix. Pizzas were part of the equation, right? Corey Feldman, right? He later came out public talking about all the pedophiles and vultures in Hollywood. Well, there's that famous scene in the movie he was in when, you know, this pizza delivery van pulls up and suddenly the side doors open and all these pizza boxes fall out. Macaulay Culkin, who may have been abused during his time in Hollywood as a child actor, in the famous Home Alone movie, he orders pizza to be delivered to his front door. So all along, this was being used as, you know, the pizza symbology to denote pedophilia. I do believe that. But again, right, they added the twist. They added the psyop aspect of it, where the guy went in and pretended to want to go in there and find pedophiles in the pizza place, and then he was arrested in a totally fake arrest, because in real life he would have been gunned down. So that was completely fake. Unfortunately, this latest terrorist accident was not fake. People were really killed, so it cannot be called a hoaxed event. You see the progression, right? Oh, woman goes to a checkpoint or a roadblock, and she's gunned down and murdered, and then they claim after the fact that she was wielding a knife. This is in places where there's total gun control, and only the forces of repression have firearms, right? So in order to create, or rather continue, the meme, the Hollywood scripting of the victim aggressor, well, you know, the old woman showed up at the checkpoint with a knife, and so they And then they say the old woman lunged at a security guard, policeman, army, a member of the army, and then they gunned down the old woman. And sometimes they'll put out a story that the woman had a knife, and they'll even go to the extent of taking a picture of a knife conveniently placed near the hand of the dead woman, okay? So they're covering all the bases. Gun control, then it's going to be knife control. Anything that looks like a knife, ballpoint pen, or, right, perish the thought, a letter opener, right? And now, of course, we're seeing these driver killers, these motorists who just run people over. We have that case in Melbourne where the mind-controlled motorist was driving around in circles, and clearly he was there was someone on the sidewalk that was giving visual cues to this guy as he drove around in circles. That was all a setup. And then we have just the other day this thing in London where this Muslim guy went and ran over these people and then got out of his car and, surprise, surprise, stabbed a policeman, right? And apparently these are real people that were murdered. It wasn't a fake hoaxed event with crisis actors, et cetera, et cetera. So they're tightening the screws as far as that's concerned. They're trying to make it seem as if anyone potentially can conceal a knife on their person, and anyone behind the wheel, anyone who's a motorist, is a potential terrorist. You see how that works? Right? So they're making mundane things like driving a car, they're turning that into an act of terrorism. So pretty soon anything is going to be regarded as potentially terroristic activity. Just walking, you know, I mean, the media and the Hollywood spinmeisters normalize police state activity. They normalize checkpoints and roadblocks and warrantless searches and all kinds of police oppression. They make it seem like it's a normal thing. Of course they would. That's what they're all about. That's what they're all about is control. All about is cultural Marxism and reducing human society to its lowest, most base common denominator, right? So now we're having more and more of these alleged knife attacks, these crazed motorists slash terrorists running people over. And the whole idea, of course, is to induce fear, to induce panic in problem-reaction-solution mode for people to demand that something be done, that demand that, you know, the powers that be protect us from the scary motorists, protect us from the people who may be concealing knives on their person. So, again, we just have to accept it for what it is, more attempts at creating a police state environment. And let's see what they plan to do next, because I don't think that they're through, right? I think that somewhere along the line they're going to do another false flag terrorist attack. There's no doubt in my mind that this alleged Muslim was under mind control or working for someone. He was probably mind controlled. So we're probably going to see more of those down the pike, further down the track. Now they're talking over and over about more war in the Middle East, more war involving Lebanon and Hezbollah, et cetera, et cetera. We've seen this shtick before. So we just have to be, you know, mindful once again of staying centered, staying grounded. As above, so below. We recognize what's going on around us as manifestations of this archontic control system. And when we look down at it from a higher dimensional perspective, that's all it is. We realize, okay, it's more of that. It's more of the same. And they're not going to get any kind of emotional rise out of me. Sure, momentarily, I may feel disgusted that they're doing this again and innocent people are dying. Yes, I do have a right in physical embodiment here in this earthly plane to be righteously indignant at all this, at this injustice and this persecution and this oppression, persecution meted out to innocent people at all levels. But then when we back up and we look at it from a higher dimensional perspective, it makes it easier to accept. Not accept from the standpoint of we're just going to go along with this, right? That this is just the way it is. We're going to roll over and, you know, let them have their way with us. No, that's not what I mean. I mean, we have a job to do, but we have to look at things and we have to operate from a higher dimensional perspective. And we can't get bogged down at the, you know, with all the minutiae, all the nuanced details of what's going on at the surface level. Recognize it, accept it for what it is, move on, and see it as a manifestation. Right? I choose to see it as manifestations of this control grid coming apart at the seams. These are all acts of desperation. Freeman and I were talking about this the other day on his show a couple of weeks ago. These are all acts of desperation. They're really desperate. If they're having to send all these mind-controlled nutters out there and to run people over on the street and then to make it seem as if, you know, knives are weapons of mass destruction, that in itself is a sign of weakness from the control system. So that's what I see it as. Recognize it for what it is. Look down at it from a higher dimensional perspective and move on. And not get bogged down in all the drama, because that's what they want to do. By getting bogged down in the drama, we lose connection to source. We lose our vantage point, our perspective of looking down from a higher dimensional perspective. And then we're back at ground level, being buffeted by the eddies and currents of all this crap that's being put out by the powers that be, that make us fearful and make us full of rage and make us frustrated and feeling like we're in a hopeless situation, right? And that's just not the case. I've said over and over again that the tide has finally turned, right? So let's keep that in mind. I can't finish this segment without talking about the weather. Everyone asks you, well, how's the weather? Weather's pretty good. How's the weather where you're at? Well, where I'm at, as they say here in Oz, pardon my Anunnaki, but it's pissing down rain, mate. It's pissing down rain. And there was a time, well, still is, but there was a time in the old days especially when people would look up into the sky and they would try to read portents in the sky, in the weather patterns, in the way the clouds were formed, in the way the wind patterns were. In the old days, people were very familiar with the seasons. They were very familiar with the weather patterns. And they looked at any kind of abrupt change in the weather with some degree of foreboding. I think to some degree this goes back to, you know, surviving Atlantis or dying during the Atlantean cataclysms, and also the celestially driven cyclical cataclysms that happened over time. It's something that's seared into our genetic memory. It's encoded in our genetic memory. The notion of cataclysms, of torrential rain, of radical, extreme, horrific climatic conditions, as above, so below. If you read Shakespeare, you have to read Shakespeare from the standpoint of someone who lived in Elizabethan times and someone who was steeped in the lore and the culture and the superstitions, if you will, of Elizabethan times. That's why in some of the plays, I think Macbeth was one, where Macbeth or Hamlet, I can't remember which, but there was a scene where there was a lot of thunder going on in the sky, thunder, lightning, and all this stuff going on in the heavens. Well, to an Elizabethan audience, there was the macrocosm and the microcosm. The protagonist of the story, he's going through all this inner turmoil, all this inner angst, and, you know, going through all these psychodramas. And it's reflected outwardly in the heavens, where there's all these thunder, you know, claps, lightning, rain, torrential rain. Because from a micro to a macro perspective, the heavens was reflecting the inner turmoil and the angst of the individual in the play. But also, the heavens, the rain, the thunderstorms, the lightning, reflected unrest in the spiritual realms, okay? It meant that something was wrong, something was out of whack, something was out of kilter. And then you look at what's going on with the weather patterns today. Not too long ago in America, there was the blizzards. A couple of years back, there was they made up a whole new term for it, the Arctic vortex or the polar vortex or something like that. And then you mix in the fake snow that was coming out of the sky, the fake snow that wouldn't burn, that wouldn't melt. You'd apply an open flame to it, and you'd get this horrible kind of plastic smell because it was completely artificial, right? Talk about geoengineering. So there's two things at work. There's these natural cyclical climatic changes, and then you add on top of that whatever artificial geoengineering, so-called tampering, manipulation, HAARP, CERN, whatever the case may be. As I've said before, I've seen Planet X. I've seen it from the perspective of being on the ground, and I've seen it from 35,000 feet in the air. I looked down at it, actually. So I think to some degree, these fantastic climatic events around the world are in part being driven by this extra solar system that's moving in, and hopefully it'll just pass through and nothing major will happen as a result. It'll just pass through. There'll be, you know, some local issues here and there, but nothing cataclysmic, right? And then on top of that, you add in all the weather manipulation, like the harping, the incessant harping, the incessant chemtrailing, etc., etc. And as I tell you this, I'm sitting here and I'm just hearing the rain come down from outside. I have friends up in Queensland, and they just had to deal with this monster cyclone, innocuously named Debbie, you know. Cyclone Debbie, I think that's his name. And, you know, with really high winds, very frightening. You know, people can get hurt and harmed in these situations. And then also, again, you have to factor in that some of these really terrific storms, thunderstorms, hurricanes, are artificially created. And, you know, over the last several years, I've experienced a couple of very strong storms in Australia, which I'm absolutely convinced were artificially generated. So, you know, as above, so below, in the macro sense, the heavens, not the heavens, the, you know, celestial heavens way out there, you know, throughout the cosmos, but I mean, say from Elizabethan era perspective, looking up and seeing the heavens, the sky, the clouds, the thunder, there is some unrest. There is some kind of imbalance that is manifesting itself. And I think that a lot of things are starting to play out, and a lot of things are starting to manifest. We've heard lots of talk in the recent past about Antarctica and what may be going on down there. I think that we ought to keep an eye on the weather, because what I'm experiencing right now, what many others around here are experiencing, is I feel it's something that's powerful. I feel it's something that's, I don't want to say it's unnatural, because these celestially driven cataclysms and like minor cataclysms, let's say, they are cyclical. They do come around every once in a while, and we're right at that point again. We're right on the cusp of all these things coming back, these celestially driven cataclysms. Whether they're going to manifest anytime soon, some people talk about the end of this year. You know, we hear that a lot in the field, right? That much being said, I will strive in the upcoming year or years to bring the most valid, up-to-date Planet X Nibiru second sun information that's currently out there. I don't want to feed into the Chicken Little, the sky is falling kind of thing. Interesting. Wonder where the term the sky is falling came from. I mean, stop and think about the celestially driven cyclical cataclysms over the many millennia. But I will do my best to get people on the show who are quite familiar with Planet X, the second sun, Nibiru, call it what you will. Because the information has relevance, it has value, and it may have something to do with these strange weather effects we're seeing. So, anyhow, just wanted to bring that up. Hopefully things will dry out a bit at this end, and we won't have the torrential rain to deal with for much longer. I hope the weather is good wherever you folks are, wherever you may be listening. So, we're going to have a good show this Saturday, a good interview with Sashita. She will be talking about reptilian underground bases and the thuggish military she's met at some of the other underground bases. So, wherever you may be, good listeners, have a very pleasant time, and we'll see you next week.